We are indeed blessed with a gifted and hardworking faculty that are producing really important works for not only the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and its theological discussion, but for the discussion of global Lutheranism and Christian mission as a whole. And that's where we find ourselves, this 33rd annual symposium on the Lutheran Confessions. It was sometime in late January 2009. I sat uncomfortably in David Scare's office in Jerome Hall. Who wouldn't? The reason, however, for my uncomfortableness was twofold. Scare was railing against Barack Obama, our new president, and the heating system was trying to turn a Fort Wayne winter into a New Mexico summer. So I said to Dr. Scare, "What do we do next year at the symposium?" And without missing a beat, David answered, "God." My response was, "Are you for him or against her?" His response, "It depends." The God options, what are they? 55 years ago, the options for God here in the United States at least seemed simple. Sociologist Will Herberg set it up like this. Bill, could you advance that slide, please? This thing's not working. In fact, nothing's coming up. There we go. Now it will. There you go. The options from Will Herberg, the sociologist, were Protestant, Catholic, or Jew. America's theological religious landscape seemed stable and predictable. Yes, it would have been better in the minds of many people if there had only been one option, the Protestant option. Indeed, near the time Herberg published his book, Protestant, Catholic, Jew, Franklin Clark Fry, president of the United Lutheran Church in America, was named Mr. Protestant by Time magazine. Imagine that, a Lutheran on the cover of Time. At the same time, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod was experiencing its second great wave of remarkable growth, doubling in size between 1932 and 1962. The Lutheran Church was no longer an immigrant backwater. It was a force with which to be reckoned on the American religious scene. The sauerkraut smell of the beer hall had been displaced by the fresh air of newly built suburban homes and churches. Lutheranism, it seemed, had arrived. What happened? So many of us heard Robert Preuss say over the years in many different ways, "I just like to talk about God." And so as we open this 33rd annual symposium on the Lutheran Confessions, it is appropriate that we do indeed talk about God. However, I must admit that my first reaction to David's suggestion for this particular symposium was less than enthusiastic. The topic seemed too vague and, frankly, too bland for our constituencies. Wouldn't generate much interest. But Scare was determined. He had something in mind. Now if he could only figure out what it was. Numerous conversations later, we settled on this: God, past, present, and future. And I think we were both thinking about a kind of postmodern romp through considerations about why Americans seem to care deeply about spirituality and claim to believe in God. Indeed, some 92% of Americans still claim to believe in God, or at least some kind of a higher power. Lutheranism itself is affected by such thinking. Indeed, Lutheran talk about God says something about how one understands Lutheranism. More pointedly, the theological controversies we've had reveal much about the state of theology in the LCMS. Take, for example, a familiar controversy that occurred a couple of decades ago. I must admit that I've always been somewhat intimidated by the fact that Dr. Scare has been able to coalesce his life's work into a theological soundbite. All theology is Christology. And so as I prepared this introduction, I was inspired, the Holy Spirit came upon me, as my teacher used to say, to put my theology into a phrase that I will now reveal to the world for the first time. All theology is theology. (Laughter) Okay, it's neither as meaningful nor as memorable as scares. And I actually Googled that phrase, and to my horrified surprise, I found that somebody had actually beat me to the punch on this. A blogger named Peter Lighthart had written, "All theology is theology." I'm quoting here. Then he goes on. Mike Horton says that human beings are created wired for the law. It belongs to us by nature and creation. While the gospel is an announcement of good news in the event of transgression, it has to be preached, whereas the law belongs to the conscience of every person already. Therefore, the original relationship of humanity to God is one of law and love, not of grace and mercy. This makes grace, not law and judgment, the strange work of God. Grace apparently comes from the left hand. I'm still quoting. Is this not a fundamental reversal of Luther? End quote. I should say so, and not a happy one, at least in my opinion. And this is why we need people like Dr. Mays and Professor Ziegler to explore what in many ways was a simpler time as we think about the Lutheran tradition. A period when the God options were perhaps even easier than they were in the 1950s. God. Answer A. Lutheran. B. Catholic. C. Reformed. Those were your options in the wake of 1648 and the Peace of Westphalia, where the parties of the Magisterial Reformation were officially recognized, and those who were marginalized were those who offered an alternative vision of Christianity, namely the Anabaptists. Some questions we might consider in this context are, how did Lutheranism argue for its God option from a politically and socially privileged position? And did enjoying that privileged position affect the formation of its confession of God? We'll see what Ziegler and Mays do. But times have changed, and they've changed quickly. As I write this, the world Lutheranism is in the midst of a fundamental demographical change. The center of Lutheranism is moving again. The larger Lutheran bodies of North America are struggling numerically, struggling with issues of whether they will have a future. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which once numbered over 5 million members, now counts something like 4.7 million members, a decline of about 500,000 members over the first two decades of its history. The ELCA was born with high expectations, as Norman Trexler has noted, but the prospects for the future of that church seem troubled indeed. Thus, our guests, Dr. William Russell and Reverend Mark Chavez, will struggle with the question of the way in which differing expectations of the ELCA within the ELCA threaten to tear it apart. And yet this is not a time for schadenfreude on the part of what have been called over the years the conservative Lutherans in America. The Wisconsin Synod has a static membership, and even its convention last summer faced unprecedented financial challenges to the point where they were considering closing some of their educational institutions. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for years was known for the remarkable character of its growth. In fact, the growth trajectory of the LCMS was the envy of much of American Lutheranism. That's 1847 through 1942 right there. And then things changed. Beginning in the late 60s and early 70s, a long, slow decline set in for Missouri. There'll be a test on this chart later, by the way. Here's an easier way to see it. The decline that set in has been consistent in the experience of the Missouri Synod for more than 40 years now. Yes, some of that decline can be linked to the walkout in 1974 and the formation of the AELC in 1976. Yes, some of that decline is linked to former districts like Brazil and Canada becoming independent churches. Yet the fact remains, even after those reductions are counted, Missouri has continued to decline slowly but consistently over a generation. And this is a challenging thing for Missouri to deal with. Indeed, nothing illustrates this better, this challenge better, than the way we count ourselves. Those of you who, like me, love demographics are still pining over the demise of the old statistical yearbook. (Laughter) Reveling in Missouri's remarkable growth, the statistical yearbook for years included a comparison of where we are now with where we were. It was called Two Decades of Growth. And it's a record of Missouri's expansion, a stunning record. However, as noted above, beginning in about 1970, a decline set in. Interestingly, however, even while the church declined in number of members, the statistical yearbook continued to speak of two decades of growth. Until finally, around 1990, we caved in and called it Two Decades of Change. And then in 1994, I believe it was, we just stopped publishing the statistical yearbook altogether. I don't mean to make light of this change. Indeed, we know that Lutheranism has experienced demographic shifts before, will again. From its inception in Germany, it expanded to the north first, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, the Baltics, and then to the west, North America, and to a lesser degree to the east. Now the global south, Africa and Asia in particular, are seeing the largest growth in Lutherans at present. However, even as North American Lutherans have followed Europeans in struggling with issues of decline, some churches in the global south have reversed that trend or give a completely different picture, whether the Protestant Christian Batak Church in Indonesia or the Ethiopian Evangelical Church Makani Yesus, which are among the fastest growing churches in the world. Now, of course, comes the question, will this present shift from Western Europe and North America, what some might call God's past, affect God's future? That's something we as confessional Lutherans have to come to grips with, and that's why we put together this sort of a lineup that features serious consideration and talk about God. So what are the God options? Today, the exam might look something like this here in America, a pronounced contrast to Will Herberg. God, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, all of the above. Here we go. But I wonder whether this would really get the job done. Because in the interest of transparency, I have to tell you that I originally argued with Dr. Scare that we put a question mark after God's future. He wouldn't go for it. Perhaps it was nervousness about an old picture appearing in a tabloid publication. Perhaps it was wisdom on his part. But I suggested the question mark for a reason. If Protestant, Catholic, Jew was too simplistic and trivializing a way to encapsulate the complexity of American religion, the American religion of its time, I think it's fair to say that a few people of my generation, those of us who are not quite boomers yet not quite Gen X, could have anticipated the rapidity with which the veneer of the Protestant Empire has been ripped off the face of American religion. Yes, Shirley MacLaine and her New Ageism seemed weird in the 1980s, but who would have thought that the new atheism that militantly confronts Christianity in America today would become such a viable option in the face of Lutheran decline? Which brings me to the real reason I'm up here now. This has all been an introduction of Adam Francisco, in case you didn't notice. Our first speaker and his topic are extremely apropos to what we face in the present. Indeed, our options today, in terms of the God options, might actually look more accurately like this. Christian, Muslim, Jewish, all of the above, none of the above. That's Adam's problem to sort it out.